Hi, everybody. I want to welcome you all and thank you all for coming to a celebration of the life and the legacy to love and service, to surrender and commitment of our friend Scott Redmond. Thank you for bringing with you the stories, the experiences, the memories, and the touches that have helped shape all of us. From Dennis O'Donnell and JC making a commitment 23 years ago to trudge this road together, to Daniel and David beginning his journey with him this last year, each of us has an important and a vital story that completes the picture here today. While by no means any type of authoritative representation, today we're going to hear some experiences of our relationships with our friend Scott. We'd like to start by doing something that Scott absolutely loved to do to start a meeting or a workshop or anything that he did, and we'd like to start with a silent 3-minute timed meditation. For those of you who are new to meditating, there is no right and there is no wrong way to do it. Try breathing in and out. Try being mindful of your breath. If a thought comes, touch it like a feather on a bubble and continue breathing. So let's begin now. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The format of the celebration will be a few readings from the book Alcoholics Anonymous and some other things, a variety of speakers sharing their experience of their unique relationships with Scott. Our first reading will be from page 62 and page 63 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'd like to ask my wife, Cindy, to read that for us. Whatever you want.
Hi, I'm Cindy, an alcoholic, of course.
From there to there.
Oh, okay. Hi. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal, we are his agents. He is the father, we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch in which we passed to freedom. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer, being all powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, we discovered that we can face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today and tomorrow and the hereafter, and we were reborn.
Thanks, honey. Our first speaker this morning will be Jesse.
Hi, I'm Jesse, and I'm Scott's son. Will you raise your hand? Danny, you know, we were trying to figure out who should talk and stuff like that, and he asked our family if any of us wanted to talk. And, can everybody hear me? And I thought about what I wanted to say, and I realized I just wanted to say thank you to all of you, to every single one of you. Thank you so much. For what? Thank you for giving me a dad that I could be proud of, Thank you for giving me a dad that made me feel safe. He really did. He made me feel very safe as his son. You may know that Dad used to go give talks. And he gave them right up until he got too sick to give them anymore. And I think, unless I'm wrong, he kind of had to be instructed to not give them anymore. So here's a letter that he got from a guy in Detroit, Michigan, in December of 2007, which was not long ago. And I'm going to read it because I think it just lets you know what the kind of dad that I got to have. Scott, I wanted to write for two reasons. First, to thank you so much for coming out to talk, and second, a quick note to thank you for your inspiration. Since my wife was in the hospital when you arrived, I really didn't get to explain my gratitude personally for your numerous travels over the years speaking. So I will make this as quick as possible as to not take up too much of your time, but I must tell you my story in doing so. You know my story well. I grew up in a house ravaged by alcoholism with brief points of comfort when my father would go to AA. I too had the people thing, restless and irritable from the get-go, and you know, at 8 years old, I knew the cure. So 4 elementary schools, 5 high schools, 2 colleges I lied to get in, numerous treatment centers and failed attempts at AA, nut wards and absolutely no family member or friend who could tolerate me. Later, I was left homeless, no front teeth, and absolutely shattered when I didn't have a drink to steady myself. I was sober for a year and a half at 22 years old, married and nuts. My wife wanted to kill me and really tried. I believe him. For once, the pain was great enough, and I took some direction from my sponsor and listened to one of your tapes in the car. For some reason, I latched on to the hope you gave regarding your family's recovery. For some reason, I listened. I let that sponsor put his arm around me, and I started the work. You know the rest of the story. 5-time high school dropout and now a class away from a master's degree, a special education teacher for children with autism, 2 adopted children and a newborn, an AA and Al-Anon. She's so great. Marriage surrounded by hundreds of people all the time. I never dreamed of so many friends. And the people thing, it's gone most of the time. So when I got back to the hospital after watching you pull off with Gary for the hotel, when my wife came to, touched my face and asked, "Did you see your hero, honey? Did he knock it out of the park?" She always says, "Some people have sports figures, you have speakers." Your travels were never wasted, because my boys are now safe and sound. And the only way to pay you back is to pay it forward, and I swear I do. I am now 34, but when I am an old timer, I will get to brag of meeting the late, great Scott Redman. And the people I sponsor will listen to your talks like old-time radio shows. But they will not be the good old days, because the good old days better be right now. That guy's name is Sean Patterson. He's in Detroit. Thank you.
We can go home now. I'll just be quiet and introduce Richie C.
Hi, everybody. My name is Richie, and I'm an alcoholic. God, I hope I don't waste my 5 minutes crying. I'm such a crybaby sometimes. I I met Scott. I was about 2.5 years of sobriety. I was moved up to Los Angeles from San Diego, and I was sitting in the corner of Radford Hall over here, and I was really suffering. God, I'm going to cry for my whole 5 minutes. This guy stood up next to me and said, "How you doing?" And I said, "I'm not doing good. I'm not doing good, and I think I'm dying." And I was 21 years old, and I'd had 2.5 years of sobriety. And he said, "Here's my number. Call me." And we talked outside one day that night, and I asked him if he would temporarily sponsor me. He said that he believed if you wanted to be temporarily sponsored, you wanted to be temporarily sober. So I said, "Well, then will you, like, sponsor me for real, I guess, you know?" And he said, "Absolutely." And I did the work with Scott. I did the stuff that, you know, I just want to thank the Redman family for allowing us to enjoy Scott, allowing us to have Scott. And, you know, I when Jesse read the first part of that letter, I grew up in that home. That was my home. And coming to their home on different occasions and holidays and seeing all those people, which I knew when I was growing up, it didn't happen because it was just, it was crazy. I never knew what was going to happen. And I had a mother who was in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous my whole life and is now sober, but growing up, she wasn't. And seeing what Alcoholics Anonymous had done for their family really gave me hope. It really did. And it made me feel very safe. And after being sponsored from Scott for some years, I decided that I wanted to get married. And I got married, and a few years later, I called Scott, and I said, "Dude, I'm getting a divorce." And he said, "When did you get married?" And I said, "Oh, a couple years ago." But that's not the real thing of it. What happened first was, after my ex-wife left, I was all alone. I didn't have Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't have any friends. I was all alone. And I called, I had remembered Scott's number in my head, and it had been a few years since I had talked to him. And I just thought, "I'm going to call," and I called, and Nancy answered the phone, and I said, "Is Scott there?" She said, "Richie?" And I said, "Yeah." And I started crying. And I don't know exactly what I said, but what I remember was that I said, "I just didn't think you would remember me." And she did. That's the kind of place that they come from. That's the kind of family that Scott built. And a number of years later, I met my current wife, my wife in Alcoholics Anonymous. And we don't belong to any, my wife's Catholic, and I'm nothing, and who better to marry us than my friend Scott? And he did such a great job. God, he did a great job. I wouldn't have had anybody else do that. And a year later, my twin daughters were born, and he was there the day that they were born. He watched them go right by and go right into the intensive care unit. And God, I just loved him so much. And I know everybody here did. And you know, my daughters are now getting the gift of what Scott helped me do. which was find a God of my own understanding without telling me what to do. He never told me what to do. Scott came from a place where when I would call him and ask for his opinion, would say, dude, I don't know what's best for you and your family, but I bet you God does. Which is a lot different than a lot of stuff that I heard in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know, but I'm not judging anybody. I'm just telling you what I hear. Been to a lot of meetings in 21 years. I'm sorry if you're one of those people. Yeah, Scott came from a place where he allowed me to make my own decisions and allowed me to find a God of my own understanding without bullying me or telling me I was an idiot or ever putting me down. Boy, what a concept. What a concept. What it's allowed me to do is be a great father to my kids. I don't know if I had it in me before I met Scott. What I do know is that I watched him do it, and it really helped me out. It really did. I will be forever grateful to him and his family. And and I just want to thank him. And boy, I still really miss him. And I think that's all for me. Thanks for being here.
So the day my daughter, who's sitting over there, the day she was born, Scott came to the hospital and handed me a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and in it he had written, "My dearest Ruby, who is my daughter, this is your book. Here are the instructions on how to use it. If your parents ever disagree with each other and they become really, really annoying, then I want you to take this book in hand and go to them. Look at both of them in turn, shake your head, and roll your eyes with a tad of condescension. Then put the book in a place where it can be clearly seen by both of them. After placing the book in front of your parents, turn to them again, sigh a little as if you were losing your patience, then turn and leave the room without a word. You need not speak. The message will be clear. At this point, one of two things will probably happen. Either they will be humbled and come to their senses, or they will resume their hijinks the moment you leave the room. If they refuse to cease and desist, I recommend that you then take the book, put it in a pillowcase, and hit them both with it. If that doesn't work, then get some more AA literature, perhaps the 12 and 12 or AA Comes of Age. Put those in the pillowcase with the big book and strike them again. Ruby, if that doesn't work, then que sera. There's nothing more you can do for the moment. After all, you have given them the simple kit of spiritual tools, good and hard. The rest is up to God. I'd now like English as a first language again. I'd now like to introduce Constance, please.
Oh my. Wow, this is big. My name is Constance and I'm an alcoholic. And Scott gave me the gift of writing back and forth with him. And what I'm going to do is just, you know, share as in dialogue form what we talked about. I really came into Scott's life at the beginning of the end, his physical end. So it's an honor and privilege to say a few words about Scott Redman. It's all due to AA. I will say it best if I just read the way Scott and I spoke and wrote to one another throughout the past year. Certainly in the beginning, we didn't have a clue where this was all going. His absolute trust in me was and is humbling. So strong was his pinpoint goal to keep it above the horizon that there's no wonder that we spent light years of time in those moments. For most of the year, he was ready to help someone else, no matter if the service was speaking at a conference or visiting with others who met with similar health challenges. One of his simplest gestures was his "I love you" emails. If you got them, you cherish them. He also left voicemails. He practiced life beneath the life situation. Scott lovingly became known to some of us as Scooter, the Scooter, Scooter do, Scooter does, Scooter gone, Scooter back again as he moved between Los Angeles and New York. There's no doubt in my heart he was loved equally in both places, even though I would frequently tell him, "We love you more," as if that could be possible. I knew Scott 14 years before I became part of his journey in the last year of living. A slow-cooked relationship, you might say, the perfect reduction, leaving behind pretty much only the essence of what would be a real piece of business. He would give his best fight and surrender all at once. And then he proceeded to ask me if I would walk more closely this deal with him. Find out what we could find out. We would talk often, cry just as often. He asked if I was afraid of the process. I said I wasn't, and in fact, I was comfortable and patient with the process. After all, I said, I had skills. He replied, "That's good, right?" And I said, "Very." So on a side note, I was a cardiac intensive care nurse for years, so I was able to bring that into our life, and it serves me and those that I love quite well today. I remember we had a conversation about where he was physically and spiritually, what he felt he could and couldn't do, what he would and wouldn't do. He would try what he could physically endure for as long as he could. He said he would do this for his sons. We talked often about angel wings and fairy dust whenever something was going on that we didn't understand. This life beneath the life situation required a lot of angel wings and fairy dust. We were lost a lot of the time. His biggest desire was to do his AA speaking, workshops, and traveling. He needed to be useful and out of self, to be around his family and friends. Constance, he said my name a lot. Constance, he said, "Do you think this is possible?" I responded, "I believe it is not only possible, but it's as necessary as the chemotherapy." He cried, I cried, then with that big Scott, little boy Scott, giggle and laugh, he got up and said he had some phone calls to return, AA phone calls, no doubt. Off he went, Scooter gone, until the next time. As he traveled, he would sometimes call to say, "This is a daunting task. I can't keep doing it." He'd pause. Then he would say, "What do you think? Do you believe I can keep going?" All I had to reply was, you'll stop when it's time to stop. He goes, "I think we need a pinch more fairy dust here." He would say, "I cannot imagine a life without AA. I certainly witnessed him clean house, trust God, and help others over and over and over again. One of the things which so clearly stands out in my memory is the way Scott could make my Steve Abrams laugh with complete and utter abandon. I am grateful for the photographs proving this point. Another clear memory is of Scott asking about Clint Hodges, Nancy Wren, and then wondering aloud, "What could we do for Linda today?" A short story about my mother, Ruby, as it relates to my memory of Scott. At one point, Scott was taking a medication for neuropathy, which his insurance didn't cover. Having heard about Scott, Ruby, my mother, decided to ask her doctor for twice the amount of that prescription and give Scott half. I thought this was brilliant. I didn't fall far from the tree. When I shared this information with Scott, he said, "Wow, now we've created our own senior citizen mole. Just tell her we'll visit her if she's caught and she's put in jail." And we laughed and laughed. Long after Scott could no longer take this medication, neither one of us had the heart to tell my mother, Ruby, that he didn't need it. We were well taught in AA. You let people be of use. Oh boy, my mom died suddenly, 2 months before Scott. When I shared this information with Scott, he looked right at me and he said, "What are we going to do now, Constance?" That's all we had. We started laughing. He said, "Angel wings, fairy dust, let's get some more." As the moments came for Scott to move from where he was to where he was going, his family, Nancy, Micah, Jesse, that's Jessica, you know, that's Hollywood, it's Jesse and Lucia together somehow. Jesse and Lucia, and a few others were by his side. All of us that were in the waiting room, this was just so precious, did this giant penguin-like huddle. We all, and there were maybe 50 or 100, I don't know, it was a lot of people. And we all stood close. When the time had come, I sent a message to Steve stating that Scott had taken his light into another room. Steve's response via text was, "A very bright light indeed." Thank you.
Thanks, Constance. Our friend Scott was a member of many 12-step fellowships, and we were going to have a representative today come and talk from a member of Overeaters Anonymous, and she couldn't make it today. And we'd like to call our friend Holly to come up and talk, please.
Hi, I'm Holly. I'm going to pause for a minute. Nancy used to do this when I'd call her on the phone and I'd be talking and Nancy would go, "Well, hold on a minute, Holly." And I'm on the phone, I'd go, "What is she doing? You know, she's getting the laundry." And she would pause and pray. And then get back on the phone with me. And I'm like, "Oh my God, she's praying." You know? I must be really sick. So let's see. My husband said, "Well, yeah, it's an AA memorial. You have to have a story about Scott, you know, Holly." And I'm like, "I don't really have any stories necessarily, you know. I mean, I'm a member of Al-Anon, and God directed me and saved my ass by having me ask Nancy to sponsor me. And, and then I got welcomed into her family. But my husband told me a story, so I'll tell that one. We got married. You know, I married a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay. Hence, I'll be in Al-Anon for the rest of my life. And so we got married. We had a big Jewish wedding. I've never been to a Jewish wedding in my life. And I guess my husband told me he was freaking out at our wedding. I didn't even know he was freaking out. So he went to go towards the bar or something, and he talked to Scott at our wedding, because Nancy and Scott and the boys were there. And he said, what did he say? He said, "Oh, God, you know, her family's crazy." To Scott, and Scott said, I'm going to mess this story up. He said, "Oh, her family's crazy. How do I think Holly's bit the bullet, you know?" And Scott said, "You know what, she hasn't bit the bullet. She's been coming to Al-Anon and coming out and on and working this program, and so she's not crazy. You know, and I love Scott deeply, you know. To me, he was just a real safe place. You know, he was a safe, safe place. And I just can't believe, you know, we're going to live in a world without him. Because, you know, he was filled up with AA. He was filled up with life. You know, he was in the game, and he was going to give back. And he did that, and it was amazing. You know, I was looking at this book, and it talked about mindfulness and all the steps towards mindfulness. And one of them is, you know, attention, appreciation, whatever. One of them is allowing. And I thought, allowing, that was Scott. Allowing, you know, he allowed me to come into his family and be a part of his family and be who I was. You know, never once did he say, you know, Holly, you're, don't come over, you know, or, you know, you're not being of service or anything. He just allowed us. He allowed us to be exactly where we were and who we were in our crazy recovery, you know. And I didn't have that, you know. I learned how to go to somebody's house and help out because I grew up in a crazy alcoholic family. And I learned that, you know, from Nancy and him. You know, and I could just hope that someday I could open the doors of my house in the same way. And then, you know, he talks about how he loved Al-Anon or he appreciated Al-Anon. I didn't really see him in Al-Anon meetings. But maybe he went. I don't know. I mean, you know, we went to Club Med a couple times, and there was Al-Anon there. And so, you know, I'm glad that he would talk to alcoholics about his love for Al-Anon and how important it was to speak kindly of that program because it's hard. Al-Anon's a hard program. You could have a slip doing so many crazy things. And I loved his mom, Mildred. Nancy would be like, Holly, come over, Mildred's here. Go talk to Mildred. And I talked to Mildred about knitting, you know, crafts. But I thought she was cute. I don't know. It's like the Jewish New York mother-in-law that I never had. So, you know, and then I was remembering that saying he would say in the tape, all my tapes, I would say, you know, what do you bring into the party? It's like, yeah, what do you bring into the party? You know, what am I bringing to this thing called life? And how can I live a better life every day? And how can I not bring the crazy baggage of my past, you know? I had a sister who died, and she always said, you know, Holly, we did this because of Mom, and I do this because of Dad. And I was like, I don't want to do that. You know, I want to live my life free. And I get to do that because I come here, and I've had these incredible examples of what it is to live a free life. You know, I'm not perfect. And I don't know, you know, Nancy and Scott and the boys. I mean, you know, I remember Jesse when he was, I don't know, junior high maybe or something like that, sixth grade, and always hitting the table, you know, and so I don't know, I love the family, and I love him, and I can't believe he's gone, you know, it's terribly sad, but, you know, I have the responsibility to walk through life and carry his message and be an example, and if I could do, you know, like a third of what he did of reaching out to sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous and my spreading the message of what Al-Anon is and how we can get better, you know, we don't have to live in that sick, crazy life of living with the sick drunks, that we can come and we can get better hand in hand, you know, and that's that right there. You know, I'm doing that. I know I'm doing it, and I'm going to continue to do it. So I'm glad to see this room filled, and I love you guys amazingly. Thank you.
Thanks, Holly. He shot him a look. Never forget the first time I heard Scott talk, he talked about going to sitting in the Little League stands and his son getting intentionally walked with the bases loaded. And as his son was going down the first baseline, he shot him a look. And he had me at that moment, because that's all I wanted. I wanted that relationship with somebody, someplace, where at some point in time they would shoot me a look. He shot him a look. I'd now like to call in Bob Bazance.
Hi, I'm Bob Bazans, and I'm an alcoholic. Wow. I love Scott, and last night someone was saying we're going to celebrate Scott's life, and that's much of what this is a celebration of the program, it's a celebration of life. I met Scott about 15 years ago, and he's an extraordinary man in so many ways. He had probably the fiercest intellect of anybody that I've met in the AA program, coupled with an intensity of integrity that would be hard to match unless it was maybe Nancy's. And it's kind of an intimidating combination. And I really had to get to know Scott better to find out that he was also loving and gentle, because his sense of humor and his tongue could be so sharp that I found myself sometimes being intimidated by it or cautious by it until my relationship with him deepened. For those of us that are quite active in AA, I think, and get to mix with one another, you meet each other, and there's something that you're supposed to contribute to each other's lives. And I think I came into Scott's life to make a certain contribution, small contribution, and I made that. And it was a nice, so for a specific period of time, we were pretty close. And some of the stuff that I think helped deepen Scott's spiritual walk, I had been given to me some years before, and I got to do that. There's an awful lot of people who come into Alcoholics Anonymous who do the work, and they almost don't see that they've done the work. And there are other people who come in that do the work and then can describe what they did. There are very few people who can come in, see what there is to be done, do the work exhaustively, understand what they have done, and then have the skill to be able to share it in a powerful, effective way for other people to follow that path. Part of what that means for me is he was a teacher. He was a mensch. He was a man who, and I think teachers are also need to be fierce students, and there wasn't a fiercer student than Scott Redmond. I don't know that I knew anybody that would take it on in a way. He just was offended. He couldn't, if he either both didn't understand it, or, and he was offended, I think, by the inconsistencies that we are in Alcoholics Anonymous. Last night, we were having coffee, and we were talking about some old-timers in AA. You know, it reminded me, and there was nothing negative. These are people who are gone, and we were talking about it. And I was remembering, I think we get so used to each other, we have these crappy little complaints about each other. So when your name arises, we have these small little negative, you know, thing. And I was thinking of death, how when death happens, they're just gone. I mean, they don't matter. They don't count. They're gone. There's something so profound. And we know they don't matter. And I was thinking that Scott would want all of us, and I think if we could be a little bit more that way in our day-to-day life, to have them not matter. He was a big guy. When my mentor, I'm looking back, my son Peter came from New York today to attend. Scott and Nancy attended our son. There is nothing, as did Cliff, as did a number of people in this room. There's nothing appreciated more than the kindness. And he brought him in a depth of doing some step work that Peter has brought into his life and deepened his life, and it's a contribution that I think Peter will have his entire life. The thing that I like best about what I saw about Scott in the last number of years, my spiritual advisor says life is a school. Love is the lesson. If you want to gauge about whether or not what we're doing is real, not just the words, because there's lots of people who have the words. It's, are you moving towards love? And anybody who knew him during that period of time, that's what it was about, you know. And I love you, Scott, and I will miss you. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. So one of the things Scott did a lot of, because he was asked to talk all over the planet, is he ended up sponsoring guys from all over the planet. And he was very specific that if guys were to work with him from around the country or out of the state, they'd really needed to want to get a hold of him. I'm going to ask Eric to come up from New York and talk about what it was like to work that way.
My name is Eric. I'm an alcoholic.
Eric.
Thank you. I was struggling early on in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had had a relationship with Scott that was just from time to time. And then one day it dawned on me that I could ask him to actually help me. So I said, Scott, I said, is there any way that we could work together? It would just mean so much to me. And I said, and I wouldn't ask you to be my financial advisor or my therapist or my relationship, And he said, hang on a minute. And he went in the other room and he picked up the phone. He said, what are you talking about? I said, where did you get that from? And I said, well, that's where I come from. That's what was told to me. And he said, Eric, if we can't talk about those things in the context of the 12 steps, and what are we going to talk about? You know? I was a broken boy. I had a lot of sadness, even up till the end. You know, Scott would say things to me like, why are you so willing to accept the worst in yourself? Why are you so willing to believe the worst in yourself? And he said, maybe we could do this together. Maybe we could talk every morning and we could just encourage each other not to think the worst of ourselves, you know? And so what that did was it enabled me to, as Grant and I were talking the other day, about a ripple effect, you know? I mean, by speaking to Scott and by having him in my life allowed me to be a son and to be a husband and now a father. And, you know, and I have a daughter named Ruby, too, who I share with you. And do you know that I'm an emotional person? When my wife gave birth, the first person I called was Scott. And then I started getting phone calls and emails from people who I don't speak to often, rarely, congratulating me. And then last year when my daughter, Sophie, got sick, you know, I started getting emails immediately. You know what? I don't know. I mean, this is a celebration of Scott, and he has done so much for me as a man, and has taught me to always walk in closer. You know, walk in closer. I mean, he used to talk about the noise. You know, I mean, I could be doing all this stuff, but if I'm not arming myself spiritually, and I'm not, then I have no shot in having a productive day. He used to say to me, you know, if I'm not arming myself with tools to go out into the world, then I got no shot. I want to thank the Redmond family, too, because I was feeling uncomfortable, you know, getting emotional. And I have a father, but not like this. Not like the one I found in Scott. And he also taught me when I was, you know, I have two young children. He would, I don't want to curse him in this environment, but he said to me, always, he would say to me, F the grown-ups. That was his number one line. You know, I was so impacted by my parents and by what others would say. And he would always say to me, F the grown-ups, Eric. You know? And when Scott came to my house, because I'm from New York, and we spent a lot of time in recent months, and I had him spend time with Ruby, and she's electric, and I wanted him to see some of the things she did, and I sort of put her on stage. And Scott just said no. And he got down, and he looked at her, and he engaged her, and they had this incredible experience together, and it taught me something. I don't have to prove to you how wonderful my kids are. Let my kids be, you know, and These are life lessons that I wouldn't have had. And, you know, and he also taught me about, you know, advocating for my kids. He would say in the next line after grown-ups was, you got to advocate for your kids, Eric. You got to, you know, because a lot of information comes, you know, from even from parents, even from people who care about you, and it's not always helpful. And he taught me how to stick up for myself and my family, and, you know, I guess, you know, his laugh was electric. It was electric, and, you know, I was not a big fan of listening to Scott tapes, and I would actually shy away from going on conventions or anywhere he'd be because I had an intimate relationship with him, and I wanted it to be that way. And but now I've been listening to him, and the laugh, I mean, I just laugh with him every single morning. That's been my way, and his hugs. And then recently when I went to visit him in the hospital just days before, you know, he just puckered those lips up, you know, and he's a great kisser and a great hugger and a great sponsor and more than anything, a great father and a great husband. And it taught me that I'm having problems with my wife. It's okay. Work hard. You know, go. Your wife wants to go to therapy, Eric. Go. Run after. I mean, I just learned so much that I just want to say thank you.
Thanks, Eric. And just a reminder to anybody who has just walked in or come in a little late, there's some seating upstairs. If you get tired of standing, there's a balcony up on the top, and you may be more comfortable sitting down or standing up. Chuck G.
I'm Chuck. I'm an alcoholic. Just very grateful to the Redmond family, Scott, Micah, and Jesse, and Nancy for sharing Scott with us, and the boys for your experience, which would mold the relationship that I would have with my kids today, the lessons that you learned, that you taught your father, that he taught you, vice versa, whatever happened there. It was just magic. I met Scott at a place called Studio 12. He wasn't the speaker. He was just there, and I heard this guy's infectious laugh. He could crack himself up. and I started talking to this guy after the meeting, and I just clicked with him, and there was no formality in our relationship, which made it beautiful. There was no attachment, no expectations, just two guys. And he became a mentor, he became a teacher, he became a friend and a confidant, and most important, he became an enthusiast and an encourager. He always encouraged whatever it was and didn't play God. And I have some, I was just thinking about this. Everybody that comes in contact with me, I have a mind of a chronic alcoholic, and my mind's a resentment machine. And everybody sooner or later ends up on or is fodder for a 10th step. Everybody. But I never had Scott on a 10th step. I never had any bad moments. There was never a cross moment that we shared in all that time. And I think the measure, I think, of a life is probably, is the world better because you were here? I'm looking around the room, I can see the evidence of that. And there's one thing I heard a guy talk about one time. He said, one of the commodities that we all have very little of, we don't know how much we have of it, that we cannot buy, barter, or get more of, is something called time. And I think everybody in this room, like myself, knows the kind of time that Scott would give. And it wasn't just time listening. It was this attentive feeling like you were the only person on the planet when you spoke with Scott. You got his undivided attention. And he had this thing about him that he was very intuitive. And I would do stuff like I'd come to him with something, and I'd start to become self-pitying, or I'd have false humility of some sort. And he would look at me and say, you owe it to me as your friend. How dare you? You owe it to me as your friend to not speak about yourself that way. Who does that? Who tells another man, calls him sweetheart and means it? Really? And those phone messages that I miss, the ones that were just, hi, I'm just telling you, Chuck, that you're a beautiful person and I love you. Click. I've never, ever known anybody like that in my entire life. I have a lot of good friends in Alcoholics Anonymous. I appreciate every moment that I've had with this. Crystal said something to me when Scott was in the hospital. She said, I'm scared for you if something happens to him. And I am scared. Because I don't know where to turn to get that thing that I really haven't found anywhere. I found some great stuff in a lot of people, but there was something very unique about the relationship, and it was something that we talked about, and he gave back to me. My friend in the South talks about a friend of his that was getting old in the years, and he was a teacher, and he came to the guy and he said, what am I going to do? I've been going to guys like you for answers. What am I going to do when you're gone? And Don put his hands up like this and said, I've been bringing you handfuls of water. Go to the river. I think Scott used to take me to the river a lot, and I think the walk is getting really lonely and sometimes scary. The road of happy destiny in Alcoholics Anonymous is also paved with a lot of scary things and some very, very troubling people. And I'm not judging, but I'm getting close, right? And Scott was an expert at helping me navigate that stuff, to know that I take no crap, I give no crap, I can stand up for myself in a very, very loving manner. One time I was on the phone with him. He'd just gotten back from New York. He was, I think, down in the South, and he was in Alaska. And he'd just gotten off a glacier in some sort of a seaplane, and he said to me, Chuck, I don't know if this AA thing is working out for me. All this stuff does one thing. It really makes me very grateful, and I hope it does what our tradition talks about when it says that may we always, always live in thankful contemplation of him who presides over us all. I love you, Scott.
Chazarism. Chazarism, for those of you who don't know Yiddish, chazar is Yiddish for pig. And when I would read an inventory to my sponsor, Scott, and I would put in those defects of character that I was suffering from at the time, he would be on the phone and he'd say, Marsh, you're a chazar. He said, whether it be I was having some business troubles, he goes, you're having business troubles. Let me see. You're a guy that should be dead. You've got an incredibly successful marriage, a beautiful daughter. You're working in a thriving business, and this is what's going on. You suffer from the defect of chazarism and lack of gratitude. He was a treat. And now I'd like to call on a man that he loved and respected and had just a gorgeous relationship with, Cliff Roach.
Me 3 minutes to get up here, for Christ's sake. Does anybody have any salt tablets? You. My name is Cliff Roach, and I'm an alcoholic. And Scott Redmond was my best friend. Now, if that pisses you off, I'm sorry. Because you thought he was your best friend. But he was my best friend. Many people thought I sponsored him, but I never did. I'm crazy, but I'm not stupid. He used to call me his spiritual advisor. No, that's like the Pope calling Bill Clinton his spiritual advisor. He always referred to me as my liege. And when I would call, I'd say, this is the liege calling. And I've been so sad the last few months because I've been so sick myself. We'll have a meeting for me pretty soon. It'll be in Carlsbad. I hope you all can come. But I'll try to get through today anyway. But he always called me his liege, and he always took my advice. Even if he'd argue with me, he always took my advice. and he was a miracle. I heard him speak before I ever knew him. He talked at my home group, and so I went to our program chairman for our local roundup, and I said, you have to get this guy for our young people speaker. And they did, and then later on in the year, they asked me to speak at that. And at the dinner for the committee, they put the four of us, my wife and Pat and Nancy, and me, at a little table, four of us, and changed our lives. One of my great memories, we were speaking together in Fort Wayne, Indiana, or someplace like that. And you know, that when they wait for a speaker in an airport, they always hold your name up and say, Cliff. So, you know who's picking you up. And these two clowns had their names. And Scott walked up and said, are you waiting for Scott and Cliff? The guy said, yes. He said, you moron! You moron! And he got on these guys. And the whole weekend, we just rode these two guys. They loved it, all the juice there. And Nancy and he and I were speaking in Nebraska one time, and they were at a table up on the stage, sitting at this wooden table. And Nancy went first, and she was outrageous that she just was out of her mind. And she would say one outrageous thing after the other, and every time she would say one of these things, his head would go on the table. And about the seventh, I was crawling on the floor. He was so good to me. He always said, and you heard this too, I'm sure, I love you so much, I couldn't love you more if I took lessons. And I always look forward to that. And I'm so sorry I couldn't have been with him toward the end there because I was just damn sick myself. Years before I got sober, I read a wonderful book. And in the book, this guy said, I am part of every man who ever lived. And every man who lives after me, will be a part of me. And every action I take will somehow balance the good and evil in the world. So every act I take is meaningful. And if anybody ever made a contribution, it's my buddy Scott.
Thanks, Cliff. Before I married my wife, we went away on this couples weekend up in Lake Arrowhead, and Scott and Nancy were the two speakers, and I hadn't met Nancy, and my only wife, hadn't met Nancy, and Nancy was the first night speaker, and I had started working with Scott. We were working together for an hour, so I was scared to death, and I wanted to make a really good impression, and so that because I was a nut, and we're sitting at this dinner, and Nancy gets up and talk and says, and I quote, "I feel like my breasts are big enough to feed the world," and. And Cindy turns to me with that look of, what did you get us into? And Scott turned around and just did that. And we've been fortunate to be loved by them when we were absolutely incapable of doing it to each other. And I'd now like to call on John Fredenzi.
Hi, I'm John. I'm an alcoholic. Wow. Gosh. I met Scott over 15 years ago. I had heard him at a meeting. And it was one of those times, and I had, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. I mean, I don't know how many years at the time I had. And they had already always told me that someday you're going to hear somebody or a story or a connection. And I was like, yeah, I was like waiting, you know, for that to happen. And it happened. It was at Moore Park up the street here. And this guy spoke, and it was like you all went away, and I had right there. And he described what I was going through. And he had something that I wanted, and I had no idea what that was. And so I went up to him after the meeting, and I don't know what the heck I said to him. I just talked or whatever, and, you know, let me have your phone number. And he called me, and, you know, I wasn't really doing a lot of work with the guy that I was working with now. And he says, why don't you come on over? And because I was lost. And he said, why don't you come over? I'll show you what I do. I'll show you what I do. So I went over to his house. We read a little bit. He said, let's get God involved here. Let's invite God in. And he held my hand, and we got down on our knees. And I'm thinking, I have made a huge mistake. Because I didn't mean this. I did not mean this. And this was the guy that put me on a path. He helped put me on a path. He was, our relationship was very musical comedy. I mean, and it was what he was bringing to the party, not me. I mean, because he'd call up and either he'd leave a phone message or if I answered, he'd sing out Johnny Boy, you know, like Ethel Merman. And, there was always that element of playfulness. There was always that element of heart, you know, with me. And someone had gotten up and talked about, because he was a cook and he was a lot of things, you know, writer, director, but he cooked. And I was in events and the whole thing. And so we had stories and war stories and stuff like that. And we were able to connect on that. And Constance had mentioned, you know, what do you bring into the party? And he said that to me, well, you know, what do you bring into the party, man? What do you bring to the party, you know? What do you bring into the deal? But years later, that meant, how many tables and chairs are you bringing? And what kind of linens can you get? And is Dickie bringing the bread pudding, you know? He was the gayest man I had ever met. He really was. He really was. And we laughed. We laughed. He got up at a meeting, and this is while he was sponsoring me, and he got up at a meeting. It was, we were up at Jerry's Deli, and he mentioned something that was going on in his life and stuff, and it was one of those moments where I am totally screwed, because he said something to me that, you know, once that light turns on or the realization turns on, we can't shut it off. No matter what we do, we can't shut it off. So I went to him and I said, Scott, I'm in some big trouble. And he said, you're going to need to, I think you're going to need to do some writing here. Let's get God involved. And, this was the stuff I was going to my grave with. Okay. This was the stuff nobody was going to know about. And, I wrote this inventory, the sexual inventory, and it weighed, 80 pounds. And I carried it into the house, and like, I'm screwed. I'm just so screwed. And I walked in, and he was living in the valley. He had this, what do you call it, the inventory chair. It was this old chair that you sat, it went, and anytime you moved, it was this. So I sat down there, and I'm ready to just do this. And we said this third step prayer, and I'm ready to go, oh, okay, and I'm starting to get choked up, and I'm going. And he goes, okay, wait a minute. I want you to see something. So he goes, come into the back room, and I'm like, he's probably going to show me, you know, there's a tape, and I'm like, oh, it's probably some speaker or something. So we walk in the back room, he puts the tape in. The next thing I know, I'm watching South Park, the episode where Jesus and Santa Claus are having a fight. And he's howling. And Then he shut it off and said, okay, let's go. And that was my sponsor. That was my sponsor. That was the man here's what he did. Here's what he did. You know, getting on a boat, and you're on a boat, and then the boat comes to the dock, and somebody's there to take your hand and help you off the boat to get onto land. And that's what he did. That's what he did. That's what he gave. And that experience, that love, I'm taking with me, and I'm going to give it so freely because that's the only way that I can honor this man. And this man was a man with a book. He was a man with a book that gave freely of what he found. And he gave me the experience to share that with others. And Scotty, I love you, and our relationship is not over. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Sandy B.
Hi, everybody. My name's Sandy Beach. I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to start out saying some words directly to my friend, Scott. Scott, you are a meteor in my life. Your time with me was much too brief, but your path across my sky was so illumined and so full of clarity that I will see you forever. Scott and I were very close, even though we had known each other but a decade, and had actually spent time together on only a handful of occasions. We spoke on the phone often and loved each other's vision of life and spirituality. There was a generation between us, and yet we connected perfectly. Perhaps this was because he was wise beyond his years, but also because I don't have any plans to grow up anytime in the near future. Actually, we're both the same age, eternal. I would like to tell all of you how I met Scott. Sometime in the mid to late 90s, a friend of mine gave me some tapes by him. He said they were very good. I took them home, placed them on a bookcase with several others that I had not listened to. And months later, his tapes happened to catch my eyes, and I put one on. An hour later, I called my friend and asked for Scott's phone number. I called him that moment, and he answered right away. I told him who I was, and he was happy to hear from me. I told him I had just listened to his presentation on steps 1 through 3 and was moved to call him. I told him how happy I was that we had such an excellent new teacher in AA and that his message truly captured the essence of our steps. I just wanted to thank him for his vision, and I urged them to never stop seeking. Over the years, we exchanged writings, books, and ideas on just about everything. Eventually, we met at a conference, and I know we talked for hours. I talked to him about the men's spiritual weekend I was preparing in Tampa. He sent me some wonderful materials on the workshops he did with the men he sponsored. I know it helped point me in the right direction. Our biggest connection was that we both knew the great joy of seeking and its incalculable results. He loved Emmett Fox's Sermon on the Mount and mentioned it often in his talks. This book was written the year that Bill Wilson got sober and was a mainstay of early sobriety in AA. Scott liked it so much that we often teased him about leading the cause of Jews for Jesus. On more than one occasion, he would make note of the times he was teased and put down for being a Jew. About a year ago, the General Service Office came out with a version of the Big Book in Hebrew. I sent him a surprise copy and inscribed in the front that his complaining had finally paid off. The last three times we were together were absolutely wonderful. Last August, we were in a small Kentucky conference right across the Ohio River from Cincinnati. Friends took us sightseeing and for lunch on the riverfront. I have a photo of the two of us with our arms around each other and the beautiful bridges in the background. Then we did work together at the Men's Spiritual Weekend in Tampa last December. This was the first time we sat together and alternately answered questions from those in attendance. It was so very joyful. So much fun was it that I persuaded Steve A. to let us do the same thing on the January Sober Club Med. Our last time sharing together was at 2 p.m. on Thursday, January 17th at Turks and Caicos. We alternated answering some wonderful questions that had been written by those in attendance. Each of his answers made me realize more than ever that truth comes in many shapes and forms. What a pleasure to experience someone else's truth and allow it to blend with yours. We spoke often about dying and the best way to experience it. I know that even in dying, he wanted to be the best teacher he could, and I think he came through with flying colors. As we shared that time, I knew that because of his work, he had a powerful awareness that the best was yet to come. Scott, I salute your life and your divinity. Scott Redmond did not lose his battle with life. He won it with flying colors. I would like to close with a poem that Scott and I liked. It's called High Flight, and it's the most famous aviation poem ever written. Its author was a young freshman at Yale who volunteered to get in the war effort against Hitler even before Pearl Harbor. He went to England, joined the RAF after flying several missions in the British Spitfire. He went up in the Super Spitfire, and on this flight resulted in a fatal crash. His remains were sent back to his parents in the States. When they looked through the pockets in his flight jacket, they found this poem written in pencil. They sent it to the Army Air Corps, and the rest is history. I can easily imagine Scott speaking these words to us right now. Oh, I have slipped the surly bonds of earth and danced the skies on laughter-silvered wings. Sunward I've climbed and joined the tumbling mirth of sun-split clouds and done 100 things you have never dreamed of. Wheeled and soared and swung high in the sunlit silence. Hovering there, I've chased the shouting wind along and flung my eager soul through footless halls of air. Up, up the long, delirious, burning blue, I've topped the windswept heights with easy grace, where never lark nor even eagle flew. And while with silent, lifting mind I've trod the high, untrespassed sanctity of space, put out my hand and touched the face of God. Thank you.
Thanks, Sandy. Phil R.
Hi, my name is Phil. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, everybody who's talked so beautifully today about my friend Scott. And like the people said, thank you guys for sharing him with us for all these years. I met Scott on January 6, 1991, and there's not one person in my life that has affected me as much as he has. Knowing him literally changed my life. You know, the timing of me meeting Scott was absolutely perfect. He was an incredible man and a handsome man with just a magnificent ability to transmit the essence of Alcoholics Anonymous. And a lot of people Many, many people, thousands of people have heard him talk, you know, and I never got tired of hearing him talk. He was the guy who took me through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and changed my life. And he did it in such a beautiful, kind, and patient way, like a lot of people here have talked about. It was done in such a wonderful spirit that I could accept it. And I had no idea at the time that there was the other stuff that was going to come with it, that I got to be part of your family. And I just love you guys. I don't know if all of you can see this picture at the bottom here of Scott lying down. That's my daughter on his chest. And she sends her love. She's in London right now, and she's 13 years old. But when she came into this world, we didn't think she was going to live. And Scott walked through that with me and my family in just an incredible way. And his presence is so in effect in my life right now in so many ways. I hear his voice. His voice is with me all the time. You know, he taught me how to be a sponsor. He taught me how to be a sober man. He taught me how to be a worker among workers. He taught me how to go to work and as he would say, give a dime for your nickel. You know, I got that from him. And I learned so much about being a parent from being around the Redmond family, you know, and watching Nancy and Scott. And I can't talk about Scott without talking about Nancy, because I got to be at their house all the time, you know, and just be part of those functions. And I learned to be a parent by watching them parent their children. And I see the evidence of that in my child now, you know. I'm so, so grateful that I got to be part of his life and he got to be part of mine. And we were friends, and he was my sponsor for 12 years, and we had a thing where we didn't talk for a few years, and neither of us could figure out why. And I want to thank my friend Richie for putting us back together. And we got to tell each other we loved each other, and we looked at each other and had no idea why we had not been in touch. It was one of those beautiful things. It was like nothing had happened. And I got to be with him a little bit in the last few weeks of his life, and I know we're good, which is a wonderful thing. And I'm incredibly grateful to be here today and to be part of this thing. He was a remarkable man, and he'll be with me forever. Thanks.
Thanks, Phil. Scott periodically liked to start new meetings. he didn't always like to finish the old ones, but he liked to start a lot of new meetings. And I'm not saying that he was controlling at all. I'm not saying that periodically he may have liked to bully his way around the format. I'm not even going to suggest that. And one of the benefits of having kind of gone along that vapor trail for a decade and a half is about 10 years ago, he decided that he wanted to start a retreat. And it started off with an old home group on a Wednesday night, and then he decided that Thursday night was a better night for a meeting, so he started a meeting on Thursday night, and then decided that he was going to start a retreat for a bunch of the out-of-town guys. It started off as Bill and Scott's Excellent Adventure, because Scott was all about being... One of the things that he taught me, and I just love so dearly, is this idea of inclusiveness, this idea of there is so no one better or worse than anybody else in the room. And we're all welcome. And we're all welcome. And he would love us all the same. So he started this retreat. It was originally Bill and Scott's Excellent Adventure. And then it turned into the out-of-town retreat. And as a result of that, we've made some lifelong relationships with guys who not only would not normally mix, but we would never get a chance to meet. And I'd like to ask Brent to come up and talk, please.
My name is Brent. I'm an alcoholic. There's no way I'm getting through this.
Well, I'm glad you're leading this, not me. As soon as we started, I started crying. I followed Scott around for 10 years, and I was the guy. He was the speaker, you know. Every time we'd go somewhere, he'd talk, and I'd just sit and wait. And then we'd lead together, and he would share with me. And I've done that all over the country with him. And I didn't know about the Ohio thing, or else I'd have probably been there. And I was sitting there thinking just now, maybe he didn't tell me everywhere he went. So, I don't think he would do that, but if he did, I will have him on my resentment list. Because of the two events that Sandy was talking about, you know, I was at both of those, and, you know, I've always just kind of hung around Scott. I was living in Los Angeles in 1996, and God, you guys have a lot of speaker meetings here. It's wearing me out. I was just tired of going and listening to somebody else. And God, don't you guys study the big book? It's a new thing, blue thing. It's really interesting. That's how I felt. And so I was talking to this person. She said, go to this meeting on Wednesday night at Jerry's Deli. And I was like, whatever. And she goes, ask for Scott Redmond. I was like, okay, so go to the meeting. I was like, just relieved it was a big book meeting, you know. So I started talking to this guy after the meeting. He goes, let's go to a meeting together. On Friday, and I said, great, you know, he said, come to the house, and we'll go to the meeting, and so I drive to Van Nuys, I go to the house, and he drives us over to Burbank, and get out, and we go in this hall, and all these people know this guy. I was like, that's kind of weird, you know, they all know this guy, but whatever. So I was just tagging along. We sat in the back in the corner. I'll never forget, and the guy gets up and says, I'd like to introduce tonight's speaker, Scott Redmond. I was like, what, you're? So he goes up and he talks. And, you know, I didn't know he was a circuit speaker or whatever. He talked, I'm sitting there going, holy cow, did you hear what that guy said? You know what he said? I was just so excited. He came, sat down back by me when it was over. I was like, wow. And he had such a powerful message, you know. And I was always so interested in what he had to say. And I think what we shared was a real unique relationship, because I live somewhere else. And when I would see him, I felt like I was the most important person in the world to him. And I did that a lot. He taught me how to live my life and to capture every moment to its fullest. And to not live in fear. And, you know, I would go to him and I would say, I've got this going on and I'm just terrified. And he was always just so encouraging, you know, and so kind. I mean, I had never been exposed to anything like that. And I really feel that there are people that are lost, you know, and don't really know necessarily how to stay sober and what to do. And he would take those people in. And I, you know, at the time had, you know, 8 years sober or something. And he just grabbed me up, you know, and he engaged me. And he taught me the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've been on all of the retreats. And I just, you know, cannot believe that for 10 years, the information that I got from this guy and the way he taught was through his example, you know, and it was so powerful. And I have cried enough in front of all you people. And the thing is, he gave me all of you. And I moved to Los Angeles. I had a U-Haul and a car, and I knew two people probably. And now, I mean, I've got a room full of people. And Scott gave me that, you know, through his example in AA. And I have him to thank for that. So thanks, Danny.
Thanks, Brent. So when we were sitting around talking about how to do this thing, how to throw a celebration for our friend Scott, how do we ask X to speak and not A through Z to speak? How do we continue the spirit of inclusiveness while not being able to ask 350 people to get up and tell their Scott stories? It was really hard, and it was a source of a lot of communication and a lot of consternation and a lot of prayer and a lot of meditation and a lot of listening to the voice of our friend Scott saying, just trust God, man. Just trust God. Just trust God. So what we thought we would do is, because everybody here has a story, and it's a really important story, because your story is anything like mine, it helps shape your life. And nothing could be more valuable than that. So when we conclude in about 10 minutes or so, what we'd like to ask is, as we leave, let's turn to the person in front of us or next to us or behind us or grab someone and tell them the story. Tell them the story, and let's not stop telling people the story. All right? We'll just keep telling the story, because that's what we do. I'd like to call on our friend Bill, please.
My name's Bill. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm glad everybody's here. I'm glad I'm not the only person that loves Scott. And I'm glad that I'm not the only person that he loved. You know? It seems like a weird qualification, but Scott wasn't my sponsor. He was a good friend of mine. And we shared a lot of incredible times together. This is really difficult for me to do, and I can tell you exactly why it's difficult for me to do. My experience with Scott, I spent a lot of time quietly reading a book on the sofa while the family ran around and did their thing, and I just hung out. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous on June 6, 1989, Scott died on June 6th of this year, and I stayed sober for a while, and I stayed a broken time that whole seven and a half, a broken man the whole time. I just couldn't get happy, and action wasn't enough to get me happy, and doing what I was told wasn't making me happy. And I was emotionally pretty devastated. Anyway, I went out and drank, and I came back to AA, regrettably. And I'll tell you what happened. I met my sponsor, Phil, who talked up here, and I went to a meeting with him one morning, and Scott was talking at the meeting, and I walked up to him to say hello, and I think I probably gave him, you know, 42 years of my miserable life in 15 minutes in detail. And and he said he was really, really glad to see me, and he hoped I'd keep coming back. But I remember him as being very funny and sweet. And I already had an inclination from my sponsor that it was possible to meet kind people in AA. And I'm really scared of people, and I really don't, I'm really not good with insensitive people. But my sponsor had been sensitive with me, and I was really grateful for that. And that night I went to another meeting. My sponsor said, why don't you come over the hill and come to a meeting? And I walked in the room, and Scott was standing there with 15 guys around him, knew that I was the new guy, and turned around, and he went, oh, Bill Ward, I met you this morning. I love you. And any minute. And I can't think of many people he didn't do that with. I find it very hard to say I love you to a lot of people. It's very difficult. One of the things that I'm so protective about with my relationship with Scott is that I felt like, and it's hard for me to speak of him, is that my relationship with him, for me, was deeply embedded in the anonymity that I felt I owed him. So to get up here and talk about what happened between us and transpired between us has been sacred for me for 10 and a half years. And that has no value to anybody but me, if you know, and it only has that if I'm doing it. And So it's really hard for me to talk about the intimacies that I had with him. I'm going to tell one short story before it's time for me to go. One of the things that was never possible for me was for me to be a happy guy. I remember at 4 years of sobriety, my sponsor saying, "Bill, you've got to find some way to be happy." And I don't know how I'm going to do it. I remember Scott on his 13th birthday handing me a candle and saying, "I hope you get just one little piece of what I've gotten from Alcoholics Anonymous." And I thought, I had met Nancy and the boys and had started becoming friends with them, and I went, "That ain't going to happen. Just isn't going to happen." And I kept coming back. I was relentless in the practice of the principles that my sponsor shared with me in dealing with my resentments and my fears and my sexual misconduct. And there was a moment when I was actually speaking to a new guy in the room, and I went, "Oh my God, I must have been 5 years sober." And I went, "I actually think I feel better than this guy." And I was shocked. I was shocked that I could have this feeling where I went, "Oh my God, I'm seeing a little light here," and I didn't know it was possible. And I'm 10 and a half years sober now. One of the things that happened is that somewhere over after the course of that, I started having enough of steam to actually date someone, and I met a guy. I have a boyfriend, and I met a guy at work in the front yard, just this adorable little guy that you saw standing over here in a white suit a minute ago, and I knew what a great catch he was. And here's the thing that's remarkable: I knew what a great catch I was, and I could see that he didn't quite get it. And I thought, it's time for me to play my trump. I'm gonna invite him to Christmas dinner at Nancy and Scott's and hang out with the boys. And Scott and I used to cook for 3 days. He would let me wash the dishes. This is what he would do while we did a 10-course meal, which are probably the most joyful experiences I've had with anybody in my life. Was to stand in the kitchen and watch him throw pots across the room, and I'd catch him and scrub away, and I was like, "How did this happen to me? This is incredible." And, but I brought Freddie to the families because I knew it was the deal maker. And Freddie and I are about to celebrate 3 years of living together and 4 years of being involved. And I have to say this. I don't want to say this out of turn. My relationship with my boyfriend, my relationship with my friends, just dozens that are here, is a symptom of the treatment of alcoholism. It's a symptom of that. It's not a gift of that. It's a symptom of me having been willing to look at why I was wrong and start finding in a gentle, loving way how I would reject that stuff that left me troubled. And so it's hard for me to talk about my friend. I loved him. Phil said he was handsome. I mean, how gorgeous. On top of everything else, it's like, I don't have a lot more to say. I would much prefer standing in front of a room of alcoholics talking about the steps of AA and the relationships that I've developed from what's been shown me out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I would much rather be doing this one-on-one with you. It's a lot easier for me to do, but I'm grateful to you. I love you. I love you. And I love all of you. Thank you.
My name is Danny. I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank Nancy and Micah and Jesse for throwing their doors open to me 15 years ago and for not cringing when I walked in. I called Scott. I had met him a couple times, and I called him and asked him if he would work with me. And he said, "Yeah, come on over to the house." And the kids let me in the front door. And I said, "And I'm scared to death. I'm scared, like, what is..." Because I heard the guy talk, and I was intimidated.
and I was dying of low self-esteem, and I was dying of alcoholism, and I didn't know that I could, I didn't know anything. So he welcomed me to his house, and I said, okay, I'm here, like right on time. I think I parked across the street an hour early just to make sure I wouldn't be late. And I walked in. He said, come here, come with me. And we walked into the back of the house, and he said, you play guitar, right? And I said, yeah, I play guitar. And so he grabbed a guitar. He said, here, pick up a guitar. Played guitar for about 20 minutes. He said, bye-bye, see you next week. I said, that's it? That's all it takes to be sponsored by Scott Redmond? He said, that's what it takes for now. And I love you. Call me tomorrow. And I called him tomorrow for almost 15 years. And, you know, I'd had some experiences in Alcoholics Anonymous that really had nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. And they left me a little scared, and they left me a little confused, and they left me a little battered. And then I came over to his house one afternoon, and we opened the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he did for me in that moment one of the kindest things that anyone's ever done to me in my life. He asked me to get on my knees with him. We held hands, got on our knees. He opened the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and read the third step prayer with me. He didn't pray it to me. He didn't preach it to me. He read it with me. He put us right there what it talks about in the third edition of the big book, where it says, one alcoholic talking to another. That was it. And what he did in that moment is he started to give me a chance. And I'll never forget when I had written that inventory, and I took it to him and sat down and started reading it to him. And I read that I was resentful at my father for dying when he was a really young guy, and it hurt me deeply. And I read him all the defects of character, and he kindly looked at me like he always did, and said, "I'm gonna suggest another possible defect of character that you might not have considered." He said, I'm going to suggest the defect of character of ungrateful. And I didn't understand it at all. And I said, ungrateful? How could I be ungrateful about the passing of my father? He said, I'm going to suggest to you that you take a look at it from a point of view that you were fortunate enough to have your dad for 19 years and a lot of other people weren't. And in that second, it shifted. In that second, I started to believe that there was a possibility that I could actually change. In that gentle, kind touch on my shoulder of a suggestion of a possibility, I started to get the magic and the music of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I call him up one day, and I'm going on about something, because I do, and he said, I got it, here's the thing. The secret of life is enjoying the passage of time. And I may have a tendency to be sarcastic, so here's what I said to him. I said, oh, great, now I'm sponsored by James freaking Taylor. And he laughed because he was a big guy, and he had a big laugh, and he laughed. And then he did something that I don't remember ever having done in my life. He hung up the phone, and he called me back, and he said, Danny, I got to tell you the truth. What you did right now hurt my feelings terribly. I was giving you something that I thought was really important, and I was treated the way I was treated by you, and it hurt me terribly. And I don't love you any less, and I'm not saying goodbye. I'm just telling you I'm hurt. And I got the gift of being able to tell the truth about myself without telling anybody else what to do as a result of his action. I get to learn how to be a dad to my beautiful little girl by watching him be a dad to Jesse and Micah. You know, not by what he told me how to do, but how he walked. You know, I get to learn how to be a husband to my wife because I saw the way he treated Nancy. Not by what he told me to do, but how he walked. So I'm going to tell this story. I asked my daughter if it was okay if I told this story this morning, and I'm going to tell this story. About 2 years ago, we had a goldfish in the house named Edie, and Edie died. And it was 8 o'clock at night, and I live in the San Fernando Valley. So when I was a kid growing up, we had a dog who died, and my mom didn't tell me for a decade. So I wasn't going to be the same type of dad to my kid that I got. So it's 8 o'clock at night, and I go to my daughter's room, and I say, Pumpkin, we got some sad news. Edie the goldfish died. And Ruby said something like, wow, I'm really sad. And I said, well, what do you think we should do? And she said, Well, I think we should wrap Edie up and take her home to the ocean so that she can go home. And I thought, oh, that's great, but I live in Van Nuys, and it's 8 o'clock at night, and I want to be a good dad, but not a great dad. So, so I said to her, I said, can you come up with another suggestion? And she thought for a minute, and she said, yeah, Pop, we can flush Edie down the toilet because eventually she'll end up in the ocean. So Cindy grabbed Ruby just like she's doing right now, and I grabbed Edie, and we walked into this little bathroom, and I plopped Edie in the toilet, and I said to Ruby, is there anything you want to say? And she said, yeah. She said, dear God, thank you for allowing Edie to live with our family this long. Now gently take her home to hers. So I'm standing in the hospital room, Scott, a couple of a day before he left us, and I couldn't think of what to do, and I couldn't think of what to say, and I didn't know what to do, and the voice of my daughter came into my head. You know, so the voice of Alcoholics Anonymous, the voice of the women my wife sponsors and my wife's sponsor, and the voice of my sponsor and the guys I sponsor came into that hospital room through the voice of my daughter, and I said, dear God, thank you for allowing Scott to be with us this long. Now please gently take him home. So that's the gift you've given me in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I can't pay you back in lifetimes. We would now like to observe a seventh tradition. So some guys are going to pass out some baskets. And while that's going on, I'd like to ask Mary Elise to come do a little reading, please.
Hi, Mary Elise, I'm an alcoholic. Working with others. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on a new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives.
So while we're waiting for the baskets to come in, I absolutely forgot what I was going to say. when we were deciding how to best celebrate the life of our friend, and Nancy and Jesse and Micah asked me to kind of stand up here and do this, I was really scared. I was really scared because I didn't know how to honor him. Bill talked about, my experiences with Scott were incredibly intimate, and the idea of trying to encompass that incredible period of time into some meaningful couple of minute share seemed kind of hollow and really scary to me. So when I invite everybody afterwards to please continue to tell the story, that please continue to tell the story. So I'd like to thank everybody for coming and celebrating today. We're going to close this thing with the way Scott loved to close a meeting, which is a 3-minute meditation, and then we'll do a little prayer. So let's begin now.
Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. My kingdom come, thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors, and lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory
After a moment of silent meditation for the alcoholic who still suffers, please join us in the Serenity Prayer.